This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 28th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 140. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary, the Big Deal feature, Alan Mullen, Chief of Staff to BC Legislature Speaker Darrell Plekis, joins me to talk about his report about defunding the police at the BC Legislature to save at least $1 million. Plus, I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is it too little too late for Justin Trudeau to speak out for Canada against China? 19 elites, including former politicians, bureaucrats, diplomats, and former journalist Don Newman, signed an open letter calling on Trudeau to free Meng Wanzhou so that Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig would be freed to return to Canada. They say the extradition laws allow the Attorney General to intervene. Newman is chair of the advisory board of a Liberal Party think tank called Canada 2020. The head is Tom Pitfield, Justin Trudeau's social media campaign strategist. Canada 2020's sponsors include Huawei, which is Meng Wanzhou's company. Kovrig and Spavor were taken hostage in December 2018 in retaliation for Meng's arrest in Vancouver. Except for a week and a half in jail, Meng has been living under curfew in luxury on Vancouver's west side. She's free to go for a walk in a park almost any time. The two Michaels, well, they're stuck in squalid jail conditions in China. Until now, the two Michaels in Washington, D.C., Pompeo and Pence, have said more to support Canada than Trudeau, who finally said this.
We cannot allow political pressures or random arrests of Canadian citizens to influence the functioning of our justice system. So I respect these individuals, but they're wrong in their approach.
My sympathies to the families of the two Michaels who want them safe at home by any means necessary. They are clearly pawns in a geopolitical struggle. However substantial the evidence is against Meng Wanzhou, Huawei, and Xi Jinping's government. This has been a long time coming for Trudeau to stand his ground against China, but will he stay the course, or is it too late? Does the Chinese Communist Party's United Front have too much sway in Canada already? Meng's extradition case could stretch on for years, but that doesn't have to mean that the two Michaels will be stuck in jail for years. Beijing hosts the next Winter Olympics in February 2022. Canada led the way recently in a boycott of the Tokyo 2020 Olympics for health reasons. The Games were postponed to 2021. The IOC listened. It's time for Canada to lobby its allies to threaten Xi Jinping with boycotting his Games of ice and snow. That might be the best and only way to bring the two Michaels home and to let Canada's courts do their job without kowtowing to Beijing and its sycophants. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
What? Dr. Henry says. We're gonna have to wait to vaccinate. So just stay strong and sing this song. You gotta wash your hands. Don't touch your face.
Clip from John Mitchell and his Vancouver Independent single, Do What?
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
Jeffy Lam in the South China Morning Post. Hong Kong's former number two official, Anson Chan, steps back from public life. Anson Chan became an outspoken advocate for democratic reform. She turned 80 early this year. Grieving the loss of her daughter, the ex-chief secretary and a prominent campaigner for political reform wants a quieter life. With the national security law for Hong Kong looming, she urges young people to uphold city's values in a peaceful manner. Nine News Australia. ASIO raids New South Wales Labour MP's home amid allegations of Chinese infiltration. Federal agents are conducting raids at the home of a New South Wales Labour MP amid allegations Chinese government agents have tried to infiltrate his office. ASIO is focusing on whether spies were aiming to influence Australian politics through Shaukat Musselman. In April, Mr. Musselman stood down as assistant president of the New South Wales Upper House after praising Chinese President Xi Jinping's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Kyoto in the Japan Times, Yamato becomes Japan's first city to ban use of phones while walking. The city said it hopes people will recognize that smartphones should be used when not in motion. According to the ordinance, pedestrians should stop at a place where they are not obstructing traffic if they want to use their smartphones in public spaces such as on streets and in parks. In January, the city conducted a study at two locations observing a total of about 6,000 pedestrians and found that roughly 12% of pedestrians were using their smartphones while walking. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
You gotta help your neighbors all across this land. And the frontline workers who fight to keep us safe. They are brave souls. By their courage, I'm amazed.
Burnaby City Councilor Joe Keithley of DOA and Mayor Mike Hurley with We're All In This Together.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
Maxine Bernstein in the Oregonian. Number of Portland 911 and non-emergency calls reached more than two-decade record on May 30th. There were more than 1,900 emergency calls and more than 2,100 non-emergency calls that day, the morning Portland police declared a riot in downtown. The city's emergency communication system experienced a drop in 911 calls during the initial months of the coronavirus pandemic. The story says the city's emergency communication system is understaffed, leading to longer waits for 911 calls to be answered. Compounding the 911 call volume, the Bureau's dispatchers are receiving follow-up calls from people questioning why police have not shown up. David Gutman in the Seattle Times, new black-led group at CHOP says protesters will decide how long they'll stay. A new group of black leaders at the Capitol Hill organized protest said the collective protest will decide how long they will continue to occupy the area around Cal Anderson Park and the Seattle Police Department's East Precinct, that has become the focus of the protest movement in the city. Mayor Jenny Durkin said it was time for people to go home. Some black community leaders have sided with Durkin's push to slowly shutter the nighttime protest zone and reopen the police's East Precinct. And Czech news. Marmot, likely one seen in downtown Victoria, captured at the Gorge Road Hospital. The marmot from the mainland was located under a shipping container on the long-term care facility's grounds. Damon Karen, a care aide at Gorge Road Hospital, said the marmot was seen on the lawn in the morning eating clover. Over the years, several yellow bellies have found their way onto Vancouver Island in various ways, which threatens the Vancouver Island marmot. And these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. A joint investigation with CTV News Vancouver. Was the NDP too late, too lax on pandemic price gouging? More than 2,000 price gouging complaints to the BC agency, but no fines. Chilliwack's Yonge Street supermarket was selling unwrapped rolls of toilet paper for $2.49. A Chevron Town Pump store in South Surrey was selling commercial-sized toilet paper rolls for $10 each, but neither was slapped with a fine from Consumer Protection BC. The agency was tasked by the government to regulate the marketplace. Between the start of March and mid-May, FOI documents obtained by the Breaker.News show that Consumer Protection BC received more than 2,000 complaints, but not a single $2,000 violation ticket has been written. Consumer Protection BC was formed in 2004 by the BC Liberal government as part of its red tape reduction plan. The NDP opposition at the time predicted it would backfire and actually harm consumers. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. Read the stories behind these headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bc.ctvnews.ca. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker.News, continuing coverage of the scandal at the British Columbia legislature. Imagine if the chairman of your company told you to go find ways to save money for the company. You traveled to learn how others are doing a better job and spent $13,000 on a fact-finding mission, much less than it would have cost the company to hire a big company with a well-known brand to do the job. While doing your work, you were called worthless by critics. Eventually, those same doubters were silenced when you submitted your evidence-based plan to save at least $1 million for the company. But strangely, your plan was shelved by a majority of directors. That's what happened to this week's guest, Alan Mullen, chief of staff to Speaker Darrell Plekis. Plekis sent him on the road last summer to tour legislatures in Canada and the U.S. In January, Mullen's report, called Review of the Sergeant-at-Arms Department and Proposals for Reform, went to the Legislative Assembly Management Committee. Mullen was ahead of his time, months before the debate over defunding police erupted. Mullen looked at best practices elsewhere. He recommended turning the police force at BC's Parliament buildings into a lower-cost security department, and he recommended making the Sergeant-at-Arms a ceremonial position. The all-party committee did not make the report public. 6 months later, it leaked out. In the report, Mullen shows how BC taxpayers are spending more to police the Parliament buildings on just 12 acres of land in downtown Victoria than the residents of Oak Bay or Central Saanich are paying to police their entire Victoria suburbs. My guest on this week's edition of The Big Deal Feature is Alan Mullen, chief of staff to Speaker Darrell Plekis at the British Columbia Legislature. Alan joined me from Victoria. This report contains two key recommendations dealing with the high-paid sergeant-at-arms position and the overall cost of policing the Parliament buildings.
Regarding the salary of the sergeant-at-arms, it is, in my opinion, grossly overpaid. We see that the salary for the sergeant-at-arms is based on the clerk's salary. And how they do it is they take the clerk's salary and they take the sergeant-at-arms salary as 66% of the clerk's salary. So the current, or as of 2018-2019 fiscal year, the sergeant-at-arms salary was $226,467. to put that in two perspectives, number one, the next closest salary of a sergeant-at-arms is Alberta, and that's $197,000. And after that, it's Ontario, which is $182,000. And the second thing to, sort of note of interest is, here we have in 2019, the sergeant-at-arms earning over $226,000. In 2008, that same salary was $93,000. I mean, we all know inflation. We all know we live in an expensive province. But, oh my goodness, 130%+ increase in the space from 2008 to 2018, that's not inflation, that's called craziness. And the second thing that you referenced there about defunding the Legislative Assembly Protective Services, what I'm saying in this report, and I think every British Columbian can read this and see this, I'm saying, look, we've got a lot of great men and women working at the Legislative Assembly in Protective Services. They are, professionals. Most of them, if not all of them, are former police officers from various jurisdictions. But what I'm saying is, why do we have every single member of Protective Services being a special provincial constable? Why do we have every single member of that group being armed? We have got a lot of functions that are security functions, and then we've got some functions that may be going down the road of policing functions. My recommendation in this report, I want to remind you, Bob, and I want to remind everybody listening that these are recommendations, and these are recommendations based on what I've seen in other jurisdictions. What I'm saying is, why would we have a model where we wouldn't have, a two-tiered approach? We have, some armed members that are there for very important days, there when the members are in session, and then you have a security component to the Protective Services group to perform security functions. This is the model that I've seen across Canada and across the United States.
The Legislative Assembly Protective Services costs more than Oak Bay and Central Saanich Police Departments, yet the Parliament buildings are so much smaller. There's a large disparity there that it's overstaffed for a small part of Victoria, and it has to even go outside the walls to call the Victoria Police Department when it needs help for security incidents, such as back in March with the protests that happened.
The actual annual operating cost of the you know, Sergeant at Arms Department at the BC Legislature. And in the fiscal year 2018-2019, it was $5.7 million. Then there's another component, which is a lot more alarming to me, and that's the overtime being spent. We are spending so grossly out of whack on overtime at the BC Legislature. It is borderline criminal. It is just craziness. Overtime for seven financial years totaled $2.183 million. That is absolutely madness. And if you look at on an annual basis, we have 38 armed members, special provincial constables at the BC Legislature, 38 who are responsible for policing a building on a one block radius that is essentially operating 80 days a year when the members are there. We spend more at the BC Legislature for overtime than the entire 1300 plus member Vancouver Police Department. Now, if somebody can explain to me how that works, I will be impressed, because that is just absolutely outrageous to me. And that is, I've just named, you know, the one of the biggest, if not the biggest, police department in the province. And we spend more on overtime for our 38 members. And it speaks to this notion that I have referenced in my report over and over again, of this notion of minimum manning versus optimum manning. So it's a police term or a law enforcement term where you have a minimum manning or a minimum staffing a model, where when you're running a 24/7 police operation, you have to have a minimum amount of staff on shift. I get it. I've been in law enforcement. The speaker has a rich history in law enforcement. I totally understand that.
How can the cost of sergeant-at-arms staff and overtime be dealt with immediately at the legislature?
What I've seen in the United States is, and I brought back here and brought back in my report, is the notion of the optimum staffing level, where you look at it and you say, okay, we have an opportunity here because we're not 24/7, 365. Instead of doing the minimum staffing, we do optimum staffing. And in the very basic of terms, Bob, what I mean by that is we're sitting 80 days a year. Currently, the current model, we have the same amount of officers on shift on a Monday morning when the House is sitting, and we have the Premier and all the elected officials on site, as we do at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night in December when the building is locked down. That does not make sense. That is going, and that's why you have overtime, because as soon as you do a minimum staffing level, then you always have to maintain that minimum. And that's why these overtime costs are so out of control, versus if you had the optimum, you have to scale it. Obviously, we need more people there when the building is in operation, we have all the elected officials there, versus when the building is locked down, tighter than a drum, and there's nobody there. But what we've been doing to date is we've been maintaining the same staffing levels. It didn't make sense then. It doesn't make sense now. The only difference is the Speaker and I are calling it into question.
Not only did the Legislative Assembly Management Committee sit on this report for 6 months, but while you were doing it last year, you were personally attacked by the BC Liberals. This is a clip from a Global BC News report of August 15th, 2019 by Richard Zussman.
10-city tour of legislative and Capitol buildings. The trip went from Victoria to the capitals of Alberta, Saskatchewan, Ontario, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Montana, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington. The cost to taxpayers, $13,000.
But essentially, we've spent $13,000 so Mr. Mullen could have his excellent summer adventure subsidized by BC taxpayers.
The Speaker commissioned me as his chief of staff to do this review, to go on this trip, and I did it in the cheapest possible way. And anybody that wants to challenge me on that, I mean, I would love to share that process with anybody that thinks that was not the case. You know, So we worked closely with the acting clerk at the time. We worked closely with the executive financial officer. A strong plan was put in place. And I set on this month-long trip to do this review. I drove across North America as opposed to fly to save taxpayers' money. A lot of expenses I didn't put in because I wanted to make this the best possible benefit to the taxpayer of British Columbia. While I was even on that trip, the leader of the official opposition, Andrew Wilkinson, the House leader for the official opposition, Mary Polak, Jazz Joe Hall, a number of other people calling into question the waste of taxpayers' money. I'm reminded that the leader of the opposition, Andrew Wilkinson, said, stop this nonsense. We don't need to be doing this. Calling into question my personal character, saying, Mr. Mullen has no qualifications in life whatsoever. I don't know about every other British Columbian, Bob, but I know for myself, that is not what I want from my elected officials on any side of the political persuasion. That is just not okay. And in this age of anti-bullying, anti-harassment, I would love to hear from these folks why they think that's okay. So they have called into question this trip. Mr. Joe Hall seemed it appropriate and seemed it funny to go on mainstream media and say this was Mr. Mullen's excellent summer adventure. There was nothing excellent and there was nothing adventurous about it. This was a work business trip tasked to me by the Speaker of the Legislative Assembly of British Columbia. And I think when everybody reads this report, they'll say, well, thank you very much. Once they got that report in January, they were very vocal and they hid behind the fact that they thought this was a waste of taxpayers' money. I was on some excellent adventure. And then they got this report in January and it was radio silence. And my question, not as the chief of staff to the Honorable Dr. Darryl Plekis, my question is, as the average British Columbian, why did you go silent? Because if you were so concerned back in August and September that this was a gross waste of money, why, when you received it in January, did you not give it to the British Columbian taxpayer and say, here's what you got for your $13,000. You tell us, is it worth it or is it not? But they didn't do that. They didn't do that because they sit on their hands and they don't want to deal with anything. And as the speaker recently said, you can't claim to have integrity if out of one side of your mouth you say, I've got integrity and I'm here to promote honesty and integrity and transparency. And then at the other side of your mouth, you say, bury it. And that is exactly what happened here. And I will not go behind the door to say it. It is clear and evident and obvious. And for anybody to say that we received this report and it hasn't been discussed, utter nonsense. It has been discussed. One of the recommendations was to engage an external organizational consultant. That has already happened. So to say it hasn't been discussed, it's misleading. And me as a British Columbian, and it does not matter what position I hold in the province of British Columbia and at the BC legislature, every British Columbian has elected these people. Every single member, all 87 members have been elected for this place. They are the voice of British Columbians. They are not afforded the luxury of sitting on their hands or of sweeping things under the carpet. They are the voice of the province of British Columbia and the British Columbia taxpayers, and they've got a fiduciary responsibility to act. And I want to know, when will they do it?
That was my interview with Alan Mullen, Chief of Staff to Speaker of the British Columbia Legislature, Darryl Plekis. The report is called Review of the Sergeant-at-Arms Department and Proposals for Reform. You can find it on the Breaker.news website. I reached out to BC NDP House Leader Mike Farnworth, BC Liberal House Leader Mary Polak, and Green Party House Leader Sonia Furstenow. I invited all of them onto this podcast to answer questions about the Mullen Report, but not one replied.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to President Shelley Frost and all the staff at the Pacific National Exhibition who are doing their best to overcome the odds and keep East Vancouver's 120-year-old institution alive during the coronavirus pandemic. They've sold mini donuts by drive-thru and barbecued ribs by drive-thru. Last week, they announced that they're holding a drive-thru parade on Canada Day. And they're holding the P&E Fair by drive-thru in late August. When life gives you lemons, make lemonade. And I'm sure they'll have plenty of lemonade for sale, too. In a world of chaos, British Columbians need something to smile about. The P&E is doing its part. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to Bob at thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting. Custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. Those were the voices of Katrina Chen and Bowen Ma, with music by Bob Deeth, covering Avril Lavigne's Keep Holding On. All three are BC NDP MLAs. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 28th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on June 28th in 1997, Mike Tyson was disqualified during the third round of his bout with Evander Holyfield for biting off part of Holyfield's ear? As the late, great Jim Taylor wrote at the time, "And so, after all the hype, it will go down as the first heavyweight title fight in history where one of the shots should have been tetanus and the champion won by an ear." Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Playing us out is Stompin' Tom Connors, Canada Day Up Canada Way, from Parliament Hill on Canada Day 1993. On July 1st, say happy 153rd birthday to Canada. Until next week.
Up Canada Way on the first day of July. And we're shouting hooray up Canada Way when the maple leaf flies high. When silver jets from east to west go streaming through our sky. We're Canadians and we're born again on the first day of July.